Hello and a very warm welcome to Central Stage. Good to have you with us. Now, after a frenetic week of diplomacy in Vienna, negotiators decided to extend their discussions for 7 more months in the search for a comprehensive agreement that would end a 12-year dispute on Iran's nuclear work. Now, the new deadline is March the 1st, 2015, with a deadline for final agreement, including annexes, on July the 1st. Welcome back. Now, today I'm pleased to be joined by two guests. Here in the studio, I have the pleasure of being joined by well-established political scientist, Dr. Mohammad Hassan Khani. It's a great pleasure to welcome you to Central Stage.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Now, let me tell you that Dr. Mohammad Hassan Khani is an academic staff member of the Faculty of Politics and Islamic Studies at Imam Sadiq University and fellow researcher at the Institute for Political and International Studies. Now, over the phone from a state in the southeast of the US, I'm pleased to be joined by a top political scientist, Professor Nader Entesar. Welcome to Central Stage.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank you.
The pleasure is all mine. Now, Professor Nader Entesar is professor and chair at the Department of Political Science and Criminal Justice, University of South Alabama. Time for a short break.
Negotiators from Iran and the Group 5 Plus 1 decided to extend their detailed discussions for 7 more months. The new deadline that everybody will be looking forward to from now is July the 1st, 2015. They agreed that the interim deal they signed in the Swiss city of Geneva last November will remain in place during the course of the new negotiations. Although negotiators did not eventually succeed to reach a comprehensive deal by a Monday night deadline, almost everyone agreed that progress was made, at least to some extent. In particular, there was the very optimistic remark made on Monday by the Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister for European and American Affairs, Majid Takht-Ravanchi, who said, quote, "We are optimistic and really believe we can reach a final agreement in a very short time, the exact date of which cannot be predicted. The issues are complicated. It will be a time-consuming process if you intend to reach agreement on very detailed issues." He added, quote, "You cannot reach agreement on everything in a limited time span." In another important development, leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, made it clear on Tuesday that the West did not manage to get anywhere and will not be able to do so in future, either by exerting unreasonable pressure on the Islamic Republic of Iran. He said, quote, "In the nuclear issue, the United States and colonial European countries got together and did their utmost to bring the Islamic Republic to its knees, but they failed and will continue to fail."
Welcome back. Now, 6 months of tough negotiations between Iran and the P+5, 6 meetings between U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and his Iranian counterpart, Mohammad Javad Zarif, in only 5 days in an attempt to break the deadlock. And Professor Entesar, yet no comprehensive agreement. That was disappointing, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, but it was not completely unexpected, especially in view of the fact that in the last 2 months or so, the U.S. has been vacillating between what we could call coercive diplomacy and cooperative diplomacy.
Right.
In at times it would seem to cooperate more, and at other times it would resort to coercive tactics, thinking that somehow coercion finally will prevail, and it didn't. So it was disappointing, obviously, but it was not completely unexpected.
Right. Thank you very much. So what do you think, Dr. Khani? Was it also a source of great disappointment to you as well?
It was not a surprise, yeah. As Dr. Entesar mentioned rightly. There were those who really expected this kind of again another round of negotiations.
But a couple of days before, you know, the final results, the Americans were saying that no extension is in sight. And
yeah, but I mean, whoever has been studying this very long period of negotiations, to me myself personally, that was maybe the most likely scenario to happen, the extension, because still the gap is there between the two sides. You know, after this marathon of negotiations between Iran and 5 plus 1, and especially between Tehran and Washington, I should say, in my view, now the negotiations has entered what I call it a phase or a period of showdown between the two sides.
Yes.
Now, in my view, accurately, both sides knew the other side's positions, red lines, what they have in their mind. So it takes a long time to read each other's mind. Now they knew. And I think it would be somehow a matter of who is going to blink first or the concessions. Now each side are expecting and waiting for the other side to make the first concession. And I think this, I mean, few months that we are talking about, it's basically there because both sides somehow are hoping that the other side can come forward with, in one for one reason or another, to have and to make that concession. American are very somehow hopeful that Iranian make the concession. And it's about now, in my view, the numbers of centrifuges and a timetable for lifting the sanctions.
For the sanctions.
Yes, this is the main point of or the main points of this agreement between two sides.
But, you know, you talked about the sticking points, but, you know, the thing is that both sides are not revealing much about the negotiations, so that actually casts doubts on what's really going on there.
Yeah, and this is somehow new. I mean, in the past, we had this tradition that they try to somehow hide what is going on behind the scenes, but now I think both sides agreed not to let it go public for the sake of the success of the negotiation and not the failure of the negotiations.
Right, thank you very much indeed. And now, despite all the differences, all parties claim that an agreement is reachable and it's basically doable. But Professor Intisar, do you share that optimism?
Well, I still have some degree of optimism, but not as much as I had, let's say, 2 months ago. Not because the two sides didn't come up to some sort of an agreement, or not that because the negotiations didn't go forward, but it's because of the significant changes that we have seen in the U.S. With the midterm election results, of the midterm elections a couple of weeks ago here, and coming to power in January 6th. We will have a completely new Senate dominated by the Republicans, and the House of Representatives is already dominated by the Republicans, and not just by the Republicans, but also Republicans who have publicly been opposed to any kind of negotiations with Iran, short of Iran completely giving up everything it has done. So I see that. You know, we are in a situation where the president knows his leverage in Congress has been weakened significantly, and his term in office is coming to an end too. And that by itself, in the U.S., when you are a lame duck president, your leverage over Congress is reduced anyway. And in this case, it's even reduced further. So I'm not that optimistic. Not necessarily in terms of what the two sides want, but what the opponents of any kind of agreement with Iran are planning to do once they are in power, complete power in Congress in the U.S. in a month and a half.
Right. But, you know, Professor, despite all what you said, there should be some, you know, hope there, because, you know, when we just look at the last days, few days, we see six, if I'm not mistaken, meetings in just less than a week. So they should have some, you know, thing to focus on, and they should have found some common ground.
Well, yes, but again, I think most of the technical issues have been either resolved or have been agreed upon. Mm. Now we are in the political phase, completely political phase, and the political issues are more salient now, and that's why it's much more difficult to finally sign any agreement, because when you bring in political factors in something that should have been basically a technical problem, then you don't know where things mm-hmm. are going to go.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. So Dr. Khani, basically Professor Amsai is saying that it's difficult to know where things are going. So I'd like to put the same question to you. Is there any indication of whether and when these gaps and the sticking points will be overcome and the gaps will be bridged? Because basically there are some analysts who say that, okay, there may be yet another extension at the end of this deadline.
Well, I think there is that possibility that, for example, after March, after June, yeah. we're going to have some kind of, again, another extension. But the main question is how, by which mechanism mm-hmm. we are going to see a resolving of these issues and filling the gap
yes.
between both sides. There are challenges there mm-hmm. in the future.
Right.
And Dr. Andasar mentioned the problem that, now the hawkish mm-hmm. are now coming to the Congress, mm-hmm. the Senate. It would be more difficult for Obama to convince them if he's going mm-hmm. to somehow accept a solution which is satisfying by Iran. But there are also more challenges in Iran.
Yes.
Again, we're having opposing voices.
Yes.
These negotiations are not going anywhere. We should not make these huge concessions. Mm. There have been voices in Iran, in the media.
Probably loud voices.
Yes,
too.
Loud voices, yeah.
Yes.
So the challenges are there. But the most important thing that's, in my view, that makes to still be hopeful and cautiously optimistic, mm. this is what I try to say, cautious, optimistic view, is the fact that neither side can afford going back to where they were a year ago or yeah. 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And this is maybe, the way they think about the achievement so far,
yes.
It's a big step forward for mm-hmm. both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Just a couple of years ago, it was not imaginable that Iranian and American foreign minister can just sit together mm-hmm. frequently,
yes.
Talking to each other in bilateral negotiations. This is something that's happened and they cannot go back. So in that sense, and the other issue is for the Americans, in my view, it's not just the Iranian nuclear issue. Mm. If we look at the now situation in the region, mm. the regional somehow developments have been pushing, in my view, Americans to seek a kind of cooperation mm. from Iran.
So you're saying that the Americans actually need Iran to resolve
exactly.
their regional issues, and then
a good example is the last letter
yes.
sent by Obama mm. to Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei, mm. and asking for kind of findings of areas of common interest between mm. Tehran and Washington when it comes to extremism and ISIS in Iraq. There are issues upon which both sides can draw the lines of common interest. And if that happens in the next few months, that would be a great help for both sides to find a solution and somehow to spill over this cooperation, not from the nuclear issue to the wider range of issues, which somehow serves the interests of both countries, Iran and the United States, and also Iran and the West, and all the countries in the region.
Right, but it seems that some countries in the region, particularly Saudi Arabia, are not very happy with those developments.
This is one of those challenges.
He flew from Paris to that's a bit strange, isn't it? Flying from Paris to Vienna just to be briefed by the American foreign minister. So they could have briefed over the telephone. I don't see why he actually, probably he wants to show that he's really...
That's an indication of the worries.
Right. Yes.
Their concerns. And I think Iranian diplomacy
right.
has a lot to do
right.
in order to somehow calm down
okay.
these are players in any way. I mean, Saudi Arabia, like it or not, is a major player in the Persian Gulf region, in the Middle East. So Iran has a lot to do to convince them that there is nothing to worry about.
Right.
If we can find a solution that will serve the interests of the all countries in the region, including Saudis.
Thank you very much indeed. Now let's take a short break. After the break, we'll be talking about some other aspects of the basically the talk, which didn't go where it should go. But of course, as I said, some people consider that some sort of progress. So please do stay with us. Welcome back. Now let's talk a little bit about the Congress and the role that Congress may play in all this. So, Professor Antasar, one of the actually the points which has been raised by many analysts is that the Congress may eventually kill any sort of agreement between the between Iran and the P+5. So, do you have that worry too?
Yes, I do. I do because. Congress obviously does have a significant amount of power in scuttling any kind of agreement, domestic or foreign, especially if the president and Congress don't see eye to eye on a host of different issues. Yes, again, specifically, if you look down the road in 2016 and let's say a Republican president like George W. Bush is elected, then that becomes even easier for Congress to scuttle any kind of an agreement. It is always a not only a possibility. I think it's a high degree of likelihood.
Right. So you mentioned Congress, Republicans, and we know that in the U.S. Republicans will control the Senate in January. So that would be yet another, probably, may well be another, yet another blow to the success.
Yesterday, two of the top Senate Republicans, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, actually had a joint press conference declaring that in January they intend to introduce new sanctions bills in the Senate. I don't think President Obama will have enough votes, even if he decides to veto such a bill. He may have some, you know, persuasion power, but I don't think he will have enough power anymore to veto any kind of bills that the new Congress will pass.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. Now, in a Tuesday meeting with participants in the World Congress on Extremist and Takfiri Movements in the Islamic Scholars View held in the Iranian holy city of Qom, the leader of the Islamic Republic said, quote, in the nuclear issue, the United States and colonial European countries got together and did the utmost to bring the Islamic Republic to its knees, but they failed and will continue to fail. So, Dr. Khani, how could you decipher those statements for us?
Well, that shows a typical view from Tehran when it comes to nuclear issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, from Iranian perspective, the nuclear issue is not the main or the major or the only problem between Iran and the West. It has, among many other issues, maybe excuses, maybe pretexts by which the West in general and the United States in particular are trying to somehow isolate Iran to Iranian government to somehow push it towards collapse, change regime, and regime change. This kind of vocabulary has been there for a long time. So deep in Iranian mind, The nuclear issue is somehow a means by which the United States tries to push Iran towards isolation, to push Iranian economy towards collapse, and to somehow, if cannot succeed, to bring Iranian government down, but to make it to look like as a failed state.
Yes.
So, and Tehran is saying that you have not been successful so far, and you will not be successful. Why? There are so many different reasons for that. From Iranian perspective, Iranian geopolitics, Iranian natural resources, Iranian somehow human capital, these are very important elements which makes it impossible for any outside power, no matter it's the United States or it's the Europe, it's a coalition between them, to ignore these very powerful factors which makes Iran somehow relevant to in the region and makes it a huge player in regional affairs and even international affairs. So from Iranian perspective, this attempt is doomed to failure because Iranian have their resolve to somehow move forward, not only in the science and industry, but also in other issues. So in that sense, it's not, again, something new that we are hearing from Iran and from Tehran. This shows the logic of the Iranian government when it comes to its differences and this confrontation between Iran and the West and the United States.
Thank you very much indeed. Now let's take another short break. After the break, it'll be time for Central Stage Online Search. Hello again and welcome back. Now it's time for today's Center Stage Online Search, where we go on the internet for you to pick for you what's taken Center Stage Online. So let's start with the first web page. It's actually from Press TV website. As you can see, Iran P5+1 can reach deal in very short time. That's according to Takhter Avanchi, the Iranian deputy foreign minister. He seems to be very optimistic. I mean, he didn't mention exactly what that short time will be. He said we can't predict, but very short, it's really something.
Yeah, but apart from the title, I mean, the picture speaks for itself. I mean, it really shows that Iranian nuclear issue is an international issue and it's a national crisis. You can see the representatives
of busy, right?
Yeah, all the major powers with Javad Zarif, and it shows the nature of the Iranian nuclear issue.
Yes. Thank you very much. Let's go to our next web page. That's from the CNN. So, new Iran nuclear talks deadline, March the 1st and July the 1st. July the 1st is also for the annexes, the first one for political issues. So, they also covered that extensively. And John Kerry seems to be trying to convince the Americans, probably the Congress, that progress was made and they made the right decisions.
Yeah, and there is no need for maybe new bills for the sanctions. They're trying to do their best in order to somehow avoid it, because somehow they know that
it has
the potential. Any new bill in the Congress, and implementation of that could kill the whole
and
process
Iran could
of
walk
negotiations.
Away, so that
Iran will take its own measures and the steps to react.
It doesn't really make sense because they're talking. It doesn't make sense because nothing has been breached. They're talking based on the guidelines that they set 6 months ago. Okay, let's go to our next web page. And this is from actually the right, let me check. Yes, it's from the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung website. And it's very interesting, isn't it? Look at, we have another picture, the same picture, showing another. I mean, it seems that the the photographers have been trying to capture every single moment and try to offer their own definition and description. Yeah. Look at John Kerry's leaving, and look at Javad Zarif. I don't know what they're trying to, and also Catherine Ashton's looking. So let's go to our next and last web page, which is basically the same picture, but another sort of, right, Javad Zarif and Frank Stamm are looking at something, looking down. I don't know what they're looking
at. Or maybe
they're
whispering in others. I mean,
I really
just
don't know.
Talking to each other.
And the others also, they're looking down. So I think we could have found many more pictures. I mean, the same picture, but different moments.
Yeah, different time, yeah.
This is from NZZ, Zeitung for the Schweiz. Actually, that's the Swiss paper. Thank you very much indeed for your valuable comments. Now, let's go to the US, where we're joined by Professor Antasar. Professor, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov was a key player in the talks. I think everybody agrees that he was a key player. But earlier in the week, he said all the elements were in place for a deal, but just, quote, political will missing. So what does he mean by political will, do you think?
By political will, he means some kind of a commitment by the U.S. That's more than an oral commitment. Some kind of the firmer commitment that the issue of sanctions or whatever types of agreement they come up with regarding sanctions are going to be codified and enforced and enforceable. Even after this administration leaves office. And I think what Lavrov probably meant was that Secretary Kerry was willing to promise a lot of things without actually coming up with specifics of how to deliver on those promises. Because what Iran was being asked for and has been actually been committed to was taking very concrete, measurable steps which everybody says Iran has adhered to. What the U.S. is coming up with or promising is just promises of actions to be taken in the future.
Right.
No guarantees that such actions may be taken or will be taken, but promises. I think this is where, again, not being part of the negotiating team, and then it's hard to say exactly what the specifics are, but it looks like based on public comments that are made about the negotiations, that this issue is a significant thing for both sides, and specifically for Iran, because if Iran is asked to commit itself to specific course of action,
right,
and the other side is not, as the other side wants to simply have the options of changing the rules of the game in the middle of the deal, then this is not going in. That's why I think we didn't go anywhere November 24th.
So let me put that last question to both of our guests. First up, Dr. Khani, what's your prognosis of the future of these talks? Do you think that, is there any sort of indication that this will get anywhere?
There are signs and indications that it will somehow get anywhere. But, I just wanted to elaborate on a very, very key concepts that Iranians are using when it comes to the failure of the negotiations so far and the lack of political will from the United States. The key words that Iranian negotiation team is using to describe the American mentality or American behavior is the word excessive demands.
Yes.
So it means that from Iranian side, Americans and 5+1 has two types of demands. The first one, which Iran fears as somehow logical demands, and Iran is saying, okay, we have responded to those demands in time, fully, and that remains what Iran called excessive demands, which means those demands that goes beyond any logic. So Iran cannot deliver those demands. Mm. So if the United States in the next few months tries to drop those excessive demands and somehow thinking in a rational and logical way, so the agreement is in reach.
Right. Maybe. Great. Thank you very much. And so what about you, Professor Antasar? There was a sort of optimism as far as you know, Dr. Khan's statements are concerned. So do you share that sort of even little optimism about the future of talks?
Yes, I mean, the very fact that they have agreed to extend negotiations indicates that both sides want to move on what they have already agreed upon. But again, come July, and if there is no agreement then by then, I think it would be probably the beginning of the unraveling of negotiations. So the next few months really are make or break months for both sides. This is where the rubber meets the road, so to speak.
But
if the U.S. is going to,
if
we'll find out. I mean, are they going to, you know, drop the excessive demands and do, you know, be more serious or not?
I understand your point, but, you know, also some analysts were talking about make or break, but we saw that it was neither make nor break. It was sort of extension. So do you think that probably the same sort of scenario is awaiting all of us?
Well, I hope not the same type. I mean, if it is, it's to me would be you know, waste of time. I hope there's, you know, they'll go into a different mode of negotiations. The U.S. finally comes up to the realization that it has to negotiate with Iran on an equal basis.
Yes.
Not as the party that can dictate the terms of the final agreement.
Right.
If that is the mindset, then. Then I won't be as optimistic. But if the mindset is that we are open, we're going there, and we see what we can give and take, then probably there is some hope.
Great. Thank you very much indeed for that. We have just about 30 seconds, Dr. Khani. And we didn't talk much about the role of Russia after the sanctions against its, you know, Russia itself. So do you think that probably that had to do something with the result?
Well, there are those who are talking about one of the things that somehow Americans should think about it seriously is the fact that if the negotiations fails, they are practically pushing Iran towards potentially become an ally of Russia in this confrontation, this new so-called Cold War between Russia and the United States. That is something that we should think about.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. Sorry to end it there, but we are out of time. But before I go, I'd like to thank again my top guests. We had Professor Nader Entisar and Dr. Mohammad Hassan Khani, both established political scientists. Thanks very much indeed for coming on, for talking to us, and of course for those valuable insights. Until next week, from me, our guests today, and the rest of the team here in Tehran, it's goodbye for now. Thanks very much indeed for watching. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It was great to have you. Thank you.